Hello and welcome to Baylor Connections, a conversation series with the people shaping our future. Each week we go in depth with Baylor leaders, professors, and more, discussing important topics in higher education, research, and student life. Happy New Year. I'm Derek Smith, and our guest on Baylor Connections today is Emily Smith. Dr. Emily Smith serves as Assistant Professor of Epidemiology in Baylor's Department of Public Health, an expert in global health, and an advocate for coverage for child surgical care globally. Her research informs the United Nations efforts to bridge the gap between need and access to surgical care for families around the world. Closer to home, she's known on social media as your friendly neighbor epidemiologist, where she shares information about public health and specifically COVID-19 over the past year in a format that makes data both accessible and actionable. It's been a very busy year, and Emily Smith, we appreciate you so much coming on the program today. Thanks so much for joining us on Baylor Connections.
You're welcome. Happy New Year. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have you here, and I know a lot of people have probably followed your page at some point or seen one of your posts on social media. In fact, I actually saw one of your posts shared by someone outside of the Baylor family before I realized it was you. So it just kind of shows the power of social media and how doing something like this can spread. But when did you start your friendly neighbor epidemiologist page on Facebook? And did you kind of imagine, could you have imagined what role it's turned out to play over the last several months?
The quick answer to that is no. Mm-hmm. I started it in March at the very beginning of this, because at that time we had heard chatter of a pandemic and should we be scared of it or should we not? And that's what epidemiologists do. They look at diseases and the spread. And, you know, I'm not an infectious disease epidemiologist, but I knew enough of the lingo to help tell people, yeah, we should pay attention to this one. And then we started hearing flatten the curve and R naughts and all that epidemiology jargon. And what did that actually mean? So I started it to be friendly to my neighbors, hence the name friendly neighbor mm-hmm. epidemiologist. And just to get the information out of what does it mean to flatten the curve and how to explain that to our children. And, not thinking that it would last this long, thinking it would be followed by my mom and her friends and a couple of my friends that I could rope into it. But I could have never imagined it had the reach and resonance that it does today. And I'm grateful for that. I mean, people want real information in a social media world where there's just a lot of info out there, a lot bad and some good. Mm-hmm. So trying to be helpful.
Well, how many followers are you at now and since March of last year?
Now I'm at 55,000 followers. Wow. With about 3 to 4 million per month. And, you know, my husband and I were laughing at that because I remember when early in April and May, when it would get shared by 10 people and I knew them all. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was helpful, but it has resonated with people to be very strong at this point. So I'm grateful for that. I mean, I know people want real information that is not politicized or an agenda, and hopefully they're finding that on my site. Mm-hmm.
Well, we've seen many of those posts. It's funny, going viral has taken on a different meaning here for most everyone in recent months in particular, but many have gone viral on social media. Are there questions or topics that have generated the most interest? What stood out to you about what has really resonated with readers?
There were things that surprised me in 2020 and now in 2021, a few days in. I think what surprised me at the beginning, really throughout 2021, is COVID, we all know, exposed a lot of underlying problems or inequities that have been around for a while, but some of us probably have not seen it as much. We know that the pandemic disproportionately affects communities of color much higher rates than our white brothers and sisters. And we also know that those living in poverty are disproportionately affected, especially for essential workers who have to make a decision between food and healthcare. And that matters with COVID because you need to get to care quickly to stop it in its progression. So where does faith come in all this? And what surprised me, and And we all saw this happening. We saw in 2020 when the pandemic became politicized, so did wearing a mask. And now we see it a little bit with vaccines, but faith became entangled in this messy way that I'm sure lots of people are going to write their dissertations about that in, you know, the years to come. But over time, this issue of faith over fear became almost a mantra to not wear a mask or to not stay at home and go to an unmasked church service or defy even stay at home statewide orders. And as an epidemiologist, it really made no sense when you look at the data. So many of us were trying to remind our Christian friends that loving our neighbor means wearing a mask and distancing and staying home. But what surprised me were the comments that started coming in. And we started seeing that really more around August is when it started ramping up. And so I started receiving some threats and harassment and frankly, some really awful messages or comments. But then I started receiving racist comments that were blaming the pandemic on riots and Black funerals and Black Lives Matter rallies. But we actually had data showing that was not the case. In fact, it was for other big events happening at the time, but not those. So the worrisome part for me were all of the threats or those comments were from Christians. Some I know and some I don't. But the point isn't about me. The surprising part is how intertwined faith and mask and freedom and race, poverty became in this really messy way. So that surprised me in 2020. What is surprising me now is more people are asking questions, more Christians are asking questions of, this is not what we want to do anymore. There's almost a lament of, I want to be a witness to the world. I don't think we did a very good job doing that in 2020. What is the next step of loving our neighbors? And some of that's going to take some courage. It's a new normal. It's to me, it's like with Jesus talking about the new wineskin. But it's a new way of moving forward that understands everything I just talked about in 2020 and comes to terms with that and then chooses a different path. So that's my hope in 2020 is that we as the church would be uncomfortable with what we saw in many parts of the nation in 2020 and move into a different direction. According to the cross and redefine our freedom according to the cross. So that those are very pendulum swings for me of 2020. One surprise was pretty negative. And then 2021, I'm seeing more and more Christians say, I want a new way and I want to do it differently.
Visiting with Dr. Emily Smith and Dr. Smith, well, certainly our prayers for you and your family are that the kinder voices on there went out more in every way of what you've just described. And, you know, you mentioned the emotion that some people feel behind it. And you talked earlier about, you know, getting out information that isn't agenda driven, that's helpful. Is it, you know, for you as an epidemiologist, we know that there's so much misinformation out there, or rumor, or people might see something, even from something that looks official, and have it be wrong. What have there been interactions on the website or on Facebook that have been meaningful to you in helping people maybe debunk a theory that's wrong, or just better understand what's really truthful and what actions are really helpful?
Yeah, I think it's helping people take a little bit of a breath of what is real and what is not. I read a statistic months ago that fake information transmits quicker, about 6 to 10 times quicker than real information. And in social media, that is so true. And some things can look legit and they're not. So I think just being a platform where people can come and take a little bit of time to actually talk through what the chatter that they might be hearing or seeing is helpful. But if anything, it would just be requiring patience and a little bit of time to think through the larger picture of maybe what people are seeing on social media or even hearing.
Visiting with Dr. Emily Smith here on Baylor Connections. And zoom out here a little bit, as we've talked about your Facebook, your role as your friendly neighbor epidemiologist. Obviously, a lot of people know you through Baylor, but many might not know about your broader work at Baylor and globally with a number of organizations in advocating for surgical care for children. We highlighted that briefly at the top of the show, but I'd like to switch gears and talk to you about that because I know that's a real passion for you. Could you describe better than I just did what your interests are in these areas and how you got involved in this area of research?
Yeah, for sure. And they segue pretty nicely, and hopefully I can tell why that story matters in a minute. But the pre-pandemic, I'm a global health epidemiologist, and so I'm interested in children who need surgical care in some of the poorest countries of the world. The main country I work in is in Somaliland. It's the fourth poorest country of the world in the Horn of Africa, and I've been there for about 5 years now with a fantastic team of surgeons and midwives and nurses that are working to try to better their country. What's interesting about surgical care too for kids is it's almost a bellwether. So if we can increase surgical care for kids, then you can increase trickle down effects to maternal health, prevention networks in terms of nutrition. And so it's a bellwether metric for the rest of the healthcare system. So my work is to try to, from an epidemiologic standpoint, to figure out how many kids in these low-income countries actually need surgical care and how many of those got care. And then to fill in the gaps of, since we have that large gap, what's preventing them from getting that care? And to give you the example of Somaliland, it looked like from our data, there were about 250,000 children who needed surgical care. And that ranges from, breaking your arm all the way to a congenital surgery, a brain surgery that's pretty invasive. And of those, in a one-year time period, there were about 1,200 children who actually got surgical care. So that gap is large. But it's not as simple as just hiring more doctors and building more hospitals. What we identified is the main barriers for these families are, one, of geography. It's too far away to get care. And then one, of poverty. And so having to make these decisions between getting surgical care for your kid or feeding the rest of your family. And those issues around health systems and poverty and inequity, that's where it segues really interesting into COVID with what I'm doing with Friendly Neighbor, because I've been very vocal about COVID in the US is affecting racial minorities, poverty. It's hitting our essential workers much harder. And so COVID is highlighting what we see in low-income countries, you know, the inequities that have always been here, but are really bringing it to the surface. So the love your neighbor aspect on a global health, what I was doing pre-pandemic for Somaliland, is definitely taking effect here in the U.S. as well. Love our neighbors that live marginalized and poor in the U.S.
This is Baylor Connections. We are visiting with Dr. Emily Smith, Assistant Professor of Epidemiology in Baylor's Department of Public Health, and your friendly neighbor epidemiologist on Facebook. And Dr. Smith, you mentioned that you've presented to the UN, and let's set that up a little bit more. I know you're a member of the Global Initiative for Children's Surgery. That's a relationship that began when you were at Duke and has continued now that you are at Baylor. Could you tell us more about that global initiative and how you ended up getting to present to the UN and what that relationship looks like?
Sure. The Global Initiative for Children's Surgery is 200 plus countries strong of providers that are on the ground. And these are anesthesiologists and surgeons and nurses. What is really unique about this global initiative, it is at least 75% represented by the countries themselves. So a lot of ownership, local ownership from these low and middle income countries. And most of them are the medical providers. And so I get to help out with the fun epidemiology research side of it. And I consider that as being more of a support for sure of I'm the learner and they are the teacher. And how can I come alongside them and answer the questions that they would like answered. Many of them are working with these issues of poverty as well, because the geography and poverty related to children not being able to get surgical care is pervasive regardless of what country you go into. So I was very fortunate just to be able to go to the United Nations in with the statement from them. When we talk about universal health coverage, we have to include children who need surgery. And that was a profoundly humbling experience to be able to go to such a large platform that you see on movies, right? Mm-hmm. Or you see pictures of, and to really talk about children and why, even though they might not have as big of a voice as adults, they are very vulnerable in terms of health.
What are, as you present to the UN and as you think about proposals to make, what are maybe some of the biggest questions that need answered? Obviously, some in terms of serving the children around the world, but maybe even in terms of obstacles that you sort of have to think about, well, how do we bridge this gap logistically?
Yes, and that's such a great question. I think it's to get everybody at the table. So when we talk about improving surgical care, it is about hospitals, but it's also about human resources. It's about getting the Department of Labor there for building road infrastructures. What about ambulances that need to get quickly to those communities? It's also about local ownership. So we need the people from a grassroots campaign that are champions within their own community to advocate of what works. And we see that not happening sometimes in global health, where there's a colonial view of doing global health, of us going in to communities and already defining the solution. The script really needs to be flipped, where the people that are the local champions, which are sometimes the grandmothers that have the best beat of the community, come to the table and help us work out policy issues of what do you think we need to do to actually get the care for the children. So I'm a peacemaker at heart. I love diplomacy, and I would like to see more of that happening, of top-down plus bottom-up approaches in terms of global health.
What are some, when you think about presenting to the UN General Assembly, what are some of the proposals that you made, and what are some of the next steps now that those have been made?
Yes, there's a push for universal health coverage, and I know sometimes that gets some bad rep, that it's a certain type of ideology, but it's just providing health coverage for all people, especially those at the bottom margins. So at the UN, our push for children's surgical care to be included in universal health coverage was part of a bigger package that went to the larger General Assembly. And I hope that there is more and more momentum, especially right now with the pandemic, for universal health coverage and what that means. And really, it's just it's a global expansion of loving your neighbor. And especially in post-pandemic era, the hardest hit countries and the hardest hit people are those who have been on the margins. So I think the time for universal health coverage is, there's not been a better time to really think through that and roll that out more. And I hope that we hear more and more of that from global leaders.
As you think about surgical care being a part of that, are there any potential obstacles to that, or any just areas that you think about, here's how we need to bridge the gap in terms of getting this as a part of that broader agenda?
Yes, I think the biggest obstacle from the agenda standpoint is convincing people that when we talk about surgery, we don't necessarily mean expensive. And I think that is a common misconception, that surgery has to be expensive. And in the US, it certainly is, but it doesn't have to be, especially when we talk about some of these low cost, high value surgical procedures for children. Those aren't as expensive as one might think. And also investing in surgical care for children, when you look at the bang for your buck, you get a whole lot more Bang in terms of economic development, but also just on an individual factor for children. So that will be the next hurdle, is convincing people that the cost effectiveness of surgical care for children is right in line with some other public health interventions like immunizations or bed nets for malaria.
We are visiting with Dr. Emily Smith here on Baylor Connections. And Dr. Smith, as we head into the final moment on the moments on the program here, I wanted to tie it all together and just ask what's next for you as we head into 2021, the meat of 2021 here. What's on your plate that maybe you're excited about in relation to your research or in terms of just serving the public the way you do on Facebook or otherwise?
Yes. Well, in terms of Facebook, I'm so hopeful for 2021 because of the vaccines coming out. And so hopefully the site can just continue to shepherd people through some of the nuances of getting us out of this pandemic. And then there is going to be a rebuilding recovery period from the faith community standpoint of asking questions that have bubbled up because of the pandemic. So I hope to do that on the site. More from a professional standpoint, I would definitely would like to bridge out into these poverty aspects of if we, now that we've defined the problem of surgical care for children, then how do we actually meet that in a way that matters on the ground to the families, but also informs policy. So I'm hopeful to bridge that a little bit more this next year.
Well, that's great. I know you've been very busy and there's still more to come. And we appreciate you taking the time in the midst of that to share with us on Baylor Connections. Happy New Year to you and your family. And thank you so much.
You as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Emily Smith, Assistant Professor of Epidemiology in Baylor's Department of Public Health, our guest today here on Baylor Connections. I'm Derek Smith. A reminder, you can hear this and other Baylor Connections programs online at baylor.edu/connections. And you can subscribe and leave reviews on iTunes. We hope you'll do that. Dana, join us next week. Thanks for joining us here on Baylor Connections.